Welcome to another episode of How to Be Tom Shalhoub. We are here with John Baudouin Sr., also known as...
Coquin de Chien.
I didn't want to mispronounce it.
Everybody does.
You've got a lot. You're very big on, monikers, right? Because we're going to explain them both. First, we'll start with your Coquin de Chien, and then we'll go to... Via Vera Vita. Okay, John?
Sure.
What is the, say it again, the French name?
Coquin de Chien.
Coquin de Chien. What is that?
So coquin is kind of like naughty, bad, yeah. You know? And de is of, and chien is a dog. So it's like bad dog. So bad I really dog. Liked, yeah. I liked the bad cat, El Gato Malo.
Yes.
Who's a pretty famous Twitter guy.
Yes.
So, I like dogs, not cats, and I'm French, not Spanish. So instead of El Gato Malo, I'm Coquin de Chien.
Fantastic. Okay. And for the people who didn't hear you last time you were on, which was a couple of years ago, explain your Via Vera Vita and how you came up with that name.
Okay. So I was writing papers about COVID in early 2020 or early COVID, right? So March, April, May. I wrote like 11 papers around that time looking into data, and I wanted to put my paper somewhere. I also sued the governor of Massachusetts in federal court over the mask mandate. And that was the governor and some other, public health commissioner and a few others.
And who was the governor then?
Charlie Baker.
Oh, it was Charlie Baker.
Yes, it was. Yeah. So, I wanted to post it on a website, so I don't know how to make websites, but I had to learn. So I made a simple website, and I posted my papers and my lawsuit on the website. But in order to come up with a website name, I wanted it to be about truth and light, L-I-G-H-T. I looked up Veritas Lux, Latin for truth, light. Veritaslux.com was taken. So was Verilux, Verilux, every combination. They're all taken. So I Googled truth, light. And Google came back with the way and the truth and the life, L-I-F-E. So, that sounds pretty good. I know in Italian it's vita, in Spanish it's vida. So I figured Latin's probably vita also. And then the way you do something is via. You do it via something, right? So via, and then I wanted via veritas vita, but that was taken. So I settled for the plural of truth in Latin, which is vera. So I got Via Vera Vita, Way, Truth, Life. That's my website. It was my second choice to Truth and Light. And then my son's friend, I lost my son in 2018 in a motorcycle accident. And my son's friend was coming over. A few of his friends were coming over for the second anniversary of my son's death in 2020 in the summer. And he's a very religious Maronite Catholic from Lebanon. And I thought, wow, the way truth life sounds like, something from the Bible. So I kind of embarrassed. I have a website. I have three words. I don't know where they're from. That's not good. I should know where they're from. Right, Tom? So I was at a red light and I Googled. So my son who passed was born on the 14th day of the sixth month. And he's a junior, John Jr. So I Googled way, truth, life, Bible. And at the red light, I looked at my phone and it said, John chapter 14, verse 6, my son's name, birth month, birthday, was a name chapter verse of the verse that I had chosen. I was kind of steered to it as a second choice. So that's my website, John chapter 14, verse 6, Jesus answered, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one can come to the Father, but through me. So I'm not done yet. Hold on, Tom. Wait just 1 second.
I'm giving that physical motion because the people who are listening are like, wait a minute, hold on a second, but go on.
So I've heard stories like this throughout my life and I shake my head and I'm like, yeah, they're lying. I don't believe them, So the light turned green. I put the phone down and the first thing I heard on the radio was the very verse, Sweet Child of Mine. So I'm sitting there like bawling in my car, and I don't know what's going on. I have this lawsuit. I don't know the law. I'm not a lawyer. I'm an engineer. I spent my time in 3 years in sales and marketing of some advanced semiconductor contracts and research, stuff like that. So it was more than sales. But anyway, I enrolled in law school. So I went to law school at 56 years old for a year in fall of 2020, first semester, then spring of 21, second semester. And they kicked me out for not getting the vaccine, even though before I went to that school for a day, I sent an email to the director of admissions and I said, hey, you know, it says here in the application, when the COVID vaccine is available, I have to get it. I'm deaf in one ear from getting a shot when I was 4 years old. I'm not getting a vaccine. So he wrote back in writing and said, don't worry, you're over 30 years old. You don't have to get the vaccine. And nobody from the school is going to ask you if you got the vaccine. And nobody from this school is going to be first in line for that vaccine. So that basically incorporates into the contract. Although the case was just dismissed, I found out an hour ago. Based on standing. I don't have standing to sue, even though I submitted a religious exemption. I kept asking, what's the status? What's the status? And they said, oh, he's going to be back in a month. Oh, he's back, but he's looking through them. And then silence. And then I got a letter in the mail saying I was unenrolled from the school before registration even closed.
So the suit against the school was dismissed because you didn't have standing. Wasn't the suit against Massachusetts dismissed because you didn't have standing?
A lot of cases are dismissed on standing. But the one against Massachusetts for the mask mandate, which was earlier, that was in federal court, U.S. District Court, District of Massachusetts. That was dismissed because the governor he rescinded Order 31 and he reissued Order 55. And in Order 55 was a paragraph 2B exception. So paragraph 2, subsection B. And my complaint was that he's depriving me of receiving free speech from others by covering their mouths so I can't see their lips move because mm-hmm. I'm partially deaf. I'm deaf in one ear.
Yeah.
And I like to see lips move so I can understand what people are saying. So I use that to get standing. And I did have standing until he issued that order with the exception. Nobody hearing impaired and no one speaking to anybody hearing impaired had to wear a mask. So being that I had no complaint personalized to me, I didn't have anything to complain about. That's when the case was dismissed. Yeah.
Very interesting. So have you told that story, the one you told me about the way and the truth and the life, have you told that on any religious programming shows? Because I would love to introduce you to someone like Eric Metaxas, who is a great broadcaster, and he wrote a book called Miracles, and I think he would really love to hear that story.
I love Eric.
Oh, you know,
I don't know him.
Yeah.
I've seen his podcasts.
Yeah.
I love that guy.
Well, I will send him this. That's just the abbreviated version of the story you just told here. I'm going to send it to him because I think he would love to have you retell that story for him and his listeners. That's just my idea. But we are going to move on to what has changed in your life since we last spoke. I mean, I found you because you made a comment on, I think, one of my YouTube videos. It was very early in COVID, and you said, I'm suing the state of Massachusetts. And I said, oh, this is an interesting guy. So I messaged you, and then we started talking. But since then, you've become a fairly well-known personality in this space.
I have. Yeah, I don't know. I have like 23,000 Twitter followers.
23,000. That's like 22,500 more than you had when this whole thing started, isn't it?
That's true. That is true. I did some stuff that nobody in the world had done. So I mean, I don't know where you want me to start. I guess, you know, I was out of law school, and I started picking up the COVID data research again, and I was frustrated because everybody was dealing with the same aggregated data from the CDC or, you know, NHS or whatever country's data. Everybody's dealing with the same bundled de-identified data that the government can screw with and hide signals in. Like a Simpson's paradox is when you have a couple of signals combined and they say, here, look at this. It was like, oh, there's no signal. And then you separate it. It's like, well, that one's minus one and that one's plus one. That's why you don't see a signal, because when you add them, they're zero. Whereas these people are in deficit in this age group, and this age group is in excess, and they're canceling each other. So I was frustrated with all the data and all the PhDs accepting this garbage that the government's giving them. So I heard on the radio that a little girl had died from COVID in January of 2022. Mm-hmm. And I thought, that didn't happen. There's no way she died from COVID. She looks healthy. Healthy girls, healthy boys don't die from COVID, from everything I've learned, everything I've looked at. So I put in through other people's names, because if eight different public records requests or state FOIAs, if they all came from me, they would have had a problem at the state. So I ran them through a bunch of other people, and seven were rejected. Like, yeah. They were, I mean, some of them were ridiculous. One, the little sidebar here, one was this guy, Girish Navani. And I said, send me the information you have, public health department and the governor's office and the lieutenant governor. It was sent to them. Give me the information you have on Girish Navani. What's his resume? Why was he chosen for the governor's reopening advisory board of COVID? Okay. He's sitting on a board with the president of Worcester Polytechnic Institute, the president of Davio's Restaurants, like he knows about pandemics, and politicians and all these other people. Why is Girish Navani there? He was CEO of a company called eClinical Works that worked in the telemedicine business. They made software to kind of manage telemedicine, which telemedicine was kind of a soft market back before COVID. Yeah. You know, people wanted to go to a doctor. They wanted to be seen by a doctor. You don't want to talk to somebody over the phone who says, yeah, take some aspirin, or, you know, oh yeah, you have this cancer. Like, you just talked to me 2 minutes on a phone. How do you know? So I just wanted to know why is this guy who can stand to gain millions and millions of dollars in the market of telemedicine on the governor's reopening advisory board advising as to whether or not to open the economy? They said, they have no information on him. None. Now, Girish Navani had to pay a fine of $155 million in a False Claims Act to the federal government.
And on a separate matter.
On a separate matter earlier, like a few years earlier. So here you have a guy who's committing fraud against the United States, gets caught, pays $155 million, and Governor Baker puts him on the reopening advisory board in a market where he stands to gain millions of dollars if he keeps the economy closed, so that people do telemedicine.
Yeah.
It's just insane. So that was denied. The only one I got back then, it was 420,000 unredacted death certificates, every death in Massachusetts from 2015 to present. And I tried to, farm it out to a bunch of PhDs and MDs. a couple of them picked it up. They didn't do anything with it. You know, only Joel Smalley in England, who is kind of a data guy, he wrote an article real quick, like in 2 days. It was good. In fact, it was so good that Massachusetts dropped 4,081 COVID deaths off the rolls within 2 weeks.
Because after looking at data, they were shamed by the data. Is that why?
I mean, I don't know exactly why, but 2 weeks after the article came out where it proved that they were overcounting COVID in Massachusetts, 2 weeks later, they dropped like 20 to 30%, somewhere between 20 and 30% of the deaths, 4,081 deaths. It's like, oh, these aren't COVID. Sorry, we made a mistake. Are you serious? Really? You can just do that? I mean, that's not like federal felony fraud of, you know, 18 USC 1035, 1040, 1343. It's all as a matter of custom and practice. They are committing fraud every day. So anyway, you know, I got that data.
Before I forget, let me ask you this, because you studied the law. Did you get your law degree? You were kicked out of school, but then did you end up getting the degree?
No, I only have 1 year of law school from a very bad, very low grade law school. In fact, I think about 200 and something kids went in. Mm-hmm. I say kids, I mean, I was 56. There were a lot of adults too.
Yeah.
a year later, I think it was 21 or 22. I can't remember, but do you know how many people passed the bar? Eight. they had eight people pass the bar. I mean, this is the walking False Claims Act. They get up, they tell everybody, yeah, anybody can go to law school. Come on in. I was in school with some of these guys. Some of these people couldn't put a sentence together, clearly. I mean, they did not belong there. And yet the school is raking in a bunch of federal money through federal loans, and they're not going to be able to pay it back. Mm-hmm. These guys, I mean, they're getting people to go into debt so they can make tons of money, 250 kids in a class, eight pass the bar. So what? If you're a nonprofit, what benefit are you bringing society? Really? I mean, they're lining their own pockets under the guise of being all right. You know what? I don't want to talk about the law school.
Well, this is the general question I have for you. If people study the law, and then if they become a lawyer, they kind of have to believe in the law. You know, if you're working in the justice system, you have to believe that it is just, right? And do you believe in the law anymore? I mean, like after what's gone on for the past few years, I'm wondering where you are in the idea that, you know, I basically don't really believe in any of it anymore. Like I don't, and people say, oh, come on, you don't believe in, you know, the thing they always say, you know, well, I believe in the rule of law. I don't believe in the rule of law, John. I do not believe in the rule of law. I do not believe in the American government. I don't believe in justice. I don't believe in the whole system. Like, I don't believe it's valid. The law is not valid because nobody is following the law. They are doing whatever they want to do. So are you where I am?
Yeah, I mean, I guess in the context of your profession, your employer, and the things that you hear with regard to rule of law and other catchphrases like that, yes. But I subscribe to, you know, Santo Tomaso d'Aquino of the 1200s, right? St. Thomas Aquinas in his view of the law. And we're talking natural law. Now, when you say natural law, a lot of people will equate that, oh, you're a religious person. It's like, no, St. Thomas Aquinas married Christian doctrine with this natural law such that it was seamless and that you don't have to have any religion at all. All you have to do is believe that every person is sovereign. They have rights. They can't be slaves. They have a right to speak freely and a right to receive free speech. It's bidirectional. You know, and all the other rights, that we've enshrined in our constitution, the greatest of which is the Ninth Amendment, which says that if just because something's not enumerated in the other first eight doesn't mean you don't have that right. You have all the other rights. It doesn't have to be written in the constitution that you have a right. And the ninth, the courts avoid all the everything to do with the ninth. The last two big cases that dealt with the ninth were Griswold versus Connecticut over birth control and Roe v. Wade, of course. They avoid the Ninth Amendment. But yet, no, Tom, I gotta be optimistic. You know, if you don't get back the law the right way, there's only one other way, and we don't want to talk about that. So
Yeah. I mean, maybe soon. We may have to at some point, but yes, I'm still part of the mainstream. I still work in the mainstream media. A lot of people say, oh, Fox, that's not mainstream. Fox is very mainstream. I'm part of the mainstream media and entertainment world. So I do have to stay in this business. I can't go off to a cabin and just be, you know, a survivalist, even though someday we may be headed that way. But you've been doing great work. You do have followers. You talk with some of the other big, I guess you'd call them influencers in this kind of media space. You bring a lot of charts and graphs. I've watched some of your videos and halfway through, I'm like, I can't look at any more graphs. I can't look at these graphs anymore because I believe it all. Like basically the premise, I buy it. I believe what you're saying. And then you continue to prove it over and over and over again with all these graphs. Do you find that people are convinced by your graphs? I feel like when you're watching one of your videos, I mean, if you're not sold 5 minutes in, are you going to be able to convince them with more graphs?
No. In fact, so when I do presentations in person, I start out with the graphs and I finish with the people. And when I wrote my book, which it should be out in November, maybe early December, it's been really tough in editing. It's taken a while. But I flipped it in my book to start out with the people to grab a reader, because a reader's a different mindset than sitting through a 2-hour presentation, right? Uh-huh. So I don't just talk about graphs. The graphs are for all the, you know, MDs and PhDs and anybody who likes numbers to say, wow, that can't really happen. Like regularly, there was a human intervention, an externality caused by man, not a disease, that caused the symptom spectrum profile to change from respiratory in 2020. All right, COVID, pneumonia, that's fine. And then the excess deaths shifted to a greater amount of circulatory in blood. So you got acute post-hemorrhagic anemia, thrombocytopenia, cardiac arrhythmia, cardiac arrest, pulmonary embolism is a big one. So, and stroke, clotting, bleeding. I show the entire, not the entire, but I show the hierarchy from about mid-level abstraction of data in the hierarchy, and that is the causes of death, who's dying, what ages they're dying at, the age profile change that dropped 16 years in 1 year on a year boundary and on January 2021. Like, they started the vaccine and the excess deaths causes changed from what purportedly COVID was doing to something else that sticks in your arm, causes from clotting and bleeding. And then the age profile changed, and then the seasonality profile changed. It was no longer seasonal. So if you look at the wave, I'm an electrical engineer, so I look at waveforms, right? Mm-hmm. So if you look at the waveform, the seasonality of death, which really only affects people over 80, but you have more people die in the winter. I'm in a cold climate up in Massachusetts, so I'm sure you remember what it's like. Even New York's a little warmer. Or, yeah. I don't know if you're in New York or D.C., but I figure you're in
New York. Westchester County.
Okay. I'm getting over a cold. So, the seasonality profile changed such that you have a sine wave of more in the winter, fewer in the summer. And COVID turned off completely in that summer of 2020, even in Massachusetts. 8,800 excess deaths in 9 weeks, and then the spring came and boom, it's off. No COVID all summer long. The winter came and there was a smaller wave in the winter. That's a seasonal respiratory virus or a seasonal virus. In 2021, the externality that was induced in society is not just seasonal. What happened is in a seasonal, the trough of a sine wave, the bottom part, will come back down to baseline normal. And then it'll go up in the winter. But what happened is the trough started going up. So more people were dying in the summer and the winter. So the externality that was added to society was kind of a linearly increasing externality, which is aligns with vaccine uptake. Now, you see all these data hounds and everybody from around the world start trying to compare vaccine uptake with all-cause deaths, excess mortality, and they're all trying to do the same thing. And it's really tough without the specific data like I have. I get unredacted data, like people's names, I can look them up. So I told you just now about the mid-level abstraction, where the high-level abstraction is like Ed Dowd. Fantastic job. I talked to his guys, Carlos and Yuri, from time to time in Portugal. And
Ed Dowd is, I think a lot of people know Ed Dowd, but he is the financial guy who kind of came in to COVID through his financial analysis. And first of all, he was looking at data, financial data from funeral homes. That's where he really came in. And then he went on a bunch of these shows and he really became prominent in this space. And I think you've talked to him a bunch of times, right?
I've talked to him personally maybe three times. He told me to write the book. And the reason is, so he does the high level abstraction data and basically knocks it out of the park, proves it. And we have all this in the younger ages. So I talked about the age, the age spectrum profile, and I write about that in my book. He basically killed it as far as bringing it home. But what I do is I come in with the mid-level. These are the causes. These are the causes in the different ages at the different times of year. So I bring another level of granularity, and then I go down to the record level. And I say that this 7-year-old girl, okay, it says she died of complications of coronavirus 19 viral infection. That's a direct quote in part one and the only thing in part one of her death certificate. Well, I found a VAERS record of a 7-year-old girl. It was entered on, so the Cassidy, the 7-year-old, died on January 18, 2022. The VAERS record, a VAERS record for a 7-year-old from Massachusetts, of which there were only four around that time period and only one very close to that time period. It was entered on January 15 for a child that was injected on January 13. And it says, reacted in 5 minutes, vomited for 8 to 10 hours. And then after that resolved, it said, that was the first vaccine. It says prior vaccine. Then the history of the incident that's being recorded is severe abdominal pain, 103 degree fever. And then the report ends because they input the report, right? January 15. And then Cassidy died on January 18. So there's nobody else that I can think of this could be. And I'm asking the court in my new lawsuit as of a year ago, it's a vax lawsuit. But for the fraud committed by Massachusetts by increasing the COVID deaths and scaring the public, there would not be a vaccine mandate. So they caused the school to create the vaccine mandate and other schools to which I cannot apply because I won't get that vaccine. So there's that lawsuit. And I gathered a bunch of evidence. I started looking for other vaccine deaths. I found mentions of 9 times vaccine or vaccination. Only one of them was coded by the CDC. What happens is the death certificates are sent to the CDC by the state. And the English words that are written, like cardiopulmonary arrest or cardiac dysrhythmia, or lymphoma or lymphadenoma. Those words are parsed by a software program at the CDC, and they create international codes like I46.9 cardiac arrest unspecified or I49.9 cardiac arrhythmia unspecified. The codes are the means by which all the entities track causes of death. So whenever you see anybody talking about causes of death, it's derived from the codes. Now, as a single point of failure, the CDC, if they do not do the right thing, if there's a glitch in their software, that all the data is wrong if they don't get it right. Now, what happened was Solomon was 60 years old and he died on January 16, 2021. It says idiopathic bronchopneumonia in the setting of thrombocytopenia in a person vaccinated 11 days prior. That's his part one. The codes that were applied, two of them were Y59.0, which means viral vaccines, and T88.1, other complications from immunization elsewhere not classified. So you have a specific and a generic. You know, if you have a Macintosh apple in your hand and the barrel says apples, you can throw it in the barrel, right? Mm-hmm. Well, that's the other complications from immunization elsewhere not classified. So when people say there are no codes for vaccine, for COVID vaccine, there are. They used it on January 16, but Tom, they never used them again. The other 9 that I have, I said 9 total, I think it's 10 total. The other 9 that I have that say vaccine, like recent vaccine on date of death from cardiac arrhythmia, that's one of them. One day before the guy died, he got the vaccine and he died from cardiac arrhythmia. Another guy died from pulmonary embolism 2 days after he got the vaccine. And there's a list of them. There's a whole list, a stroke, you know, hemorrhagic stroke and so forth. They were not coded by the CDC. Now, being that it's an automatic software parser, only 2 things could have happened. Either they turned it off or somebody started deleting BY590 and T881. So that means the CDC has been deleting codes associated with vaccines from deaths that clearly state the vaccine was causal on the death certificate. They have been doing this. Now, Minnesota, we also have the records from 420,000. Massachusetts, I now have 500,000 because it's, you know, it's another year since I got them. So Minnesota, the same thing. They got to, I think it was March maybe, it was the last one recorded. They recorded 3 of them with Y590, T881, and then poof, gone. The next 7 that mentioned vaccine, not coded. This is fraud. This is major federal felonies as custom and practice by the CDC.
Now, these things you're going over here with the codes, the states you're mentioning, these specific examples, is anyone else on this, or are you the one who's screaming in the dark about this?
So I work with a guy, Aaron Hertzberg. Aaron picked up what I did and got the Vermont records, did a very good job. Vermont, however, is a little bit less than one-tenth the population of Massachusetts.
Really? Vermont is that small? Wow.
It is that small. Yeah. We have 7 million. They have 600 and something thousand in the whole state. But Aaron, I mean, sometimes he wants to be anonymous and sometimes he doesn't. Let's just say Aaron in New York did a great job with the Vermont data. And then we kind of pooled up what we're doing. And we're looking at the Minnesota data. And I was writing the book, so he was doing more at the Minnesota data. But then he wrote an article about the Minnesota side. He didn't mention that what I had done a year earlier with the Massachusetts, whether or not it said vaccine and whether or not it was coded. On his own, without remembering what I had written, he found the exact same thing in Minnesota. He wrote an article. He sent it to Jeffrey Tucker. Jeffrey Tucker put it in Brownstone. It went viral. A million, at least a million, probably a few million people read it. 2 reporters picked it up and they wrote to the CDC The CDC wrote back, two people. I'm sorry, I'm laughing, but they said that, well, it doesn't say vaccination. It says vaccine, and vaccination is not vaccine, so it wouldn't be coded. Like, what? And then they said, well, it doesn't say side effect of, and it doesn't say adverse effect of. What they did was they took the three that were coded in Minnesota, and they formed their excuse around those three and said why the others weren't coded for Y590 and T881. But the problem with that is they didn't know we had the Massachusetts data. They didn't know that Solomon Kizito's death certificate says vaccination, not vaccine. And it doesn't say side effect of, and it doesn't say adverse effect of. So their written excuse was more written express fraud.
Well, so let's go on to the last video I saw of yours dealt with strokes. You know, we hear a lot about the vaccine, and then we hear about myocarditis, you know, heart issues. What they say is temporary inflammation of the heart, and a lot of people think it's more serious than that. And then you have, the CDC and then other medical groups and these journals saying, well, of course, though, myocarditis, it's worse with COVID than it is with the vaccine, so that's not even an issue. So that seems to be the argument that people have a lot, is people talking about heart inflammation and possible heart attacks. But you seem to think that strokes is the big deal. Is that right?
No, they're all a big deal. Strokes, I think, have not gotten the attention it should. I think strokes are far more than myocarditis in terms of death. However, they're both occurring a lot without death. You have all the dementia with the leaky brain. I mean, if you're punching holes in your microvasculature of your brain, you're crossing the blood-brain barrier, increasing the pace, the rate at which dementia is going to kill you eventually.
And what you say when you're knocking holes, you're talking about like a mini stroke, like small clots hitting the brain. Is that what you're saying?
No, that's another issue too, because where you have bleeds, you have clots. The clotting factor goes up. I'm not a biologist. I'm not a doctor. Just for your audience, I don't like to talk about this stuff, but I know it because I've been on so many calls with everybody. Mm-hmm. I was in a group with Kirsch and Jessica Rose and Stephanie Seneff and Kevin McKernan, Mark Giraudot, Byron Bridle, Matthew Crawford. We talked every week for 2 hours for about a year.
Steve Kirsch, probably the biggest name in that group, I think, because he's so prominent online. And then I think a lot of people recognize some of the other names. But Steve Kirsch, do you talk to him a lot?
Not anymore. I mean, we kind of all went our separate ways. But the group itself, I mean, you look at what people have done. Kevin McKernan with the gene sequencing of the vaccine, it's amazing. And he found, like I've shown in data, where that lymph node cancer is 400% of normal in 2023. 400% of normal. It's astronomical. And the cancers that went up first were bone marrow and lymph node cancer. Both of them have to do with forming blood. So Kevin, Jessica is just phenomenal. She does great stuff. Stephanie, we're all doing different stuff. Mark with his idea. But let me get back to knocking holes in the microvasculature.
Yeah.
If these LNPs transfect the cell, it's going to be flagged to be killed. And if you get enough of them in one place, your T cells are going to attack and basically eat a hole in your endothelial cells, which are the inside lining of blood vessels.
And what are LNPs?
Lipid nanoparticles.
Okay.
Lipid means fat.
I've heard about them. I have heard about them. Yes.
That's what carries the mRNA.
Yeah.
In order to, it says to the cell, which has lipids on the outside of the cell, it says, "Hi, I'm you. Let me in." Mm-hmm. And so the cell lets it in, and then the outside decays, the mRNA then floats and joins in with the party and starts making these spike proteins.
Yeah.
So that's how that works. But the LNPs themselves have a danger to them, where a lot of people have anaphylaxis. They have an allergic reaction to the specific lipids or the polyethylene glycol, or they got to do different things. These are not human. Right. These are fake human things. You're trying to transfect your cells to say, "Oh, don't let me in. I'm human." It's like, no, you're not human. And that's why your cells attack it. And if it attacks enough in one place, I mean, you've got aortic dissections going on, right? Your aorta is pretty strong and thick. But if they all go to one place, it's going to eat a hole through it, you know? So let me back up even further with the strokes. So I go to the individual record level. I mean, Brianna was 30 years old. She was a literature teacher at a local high school. And she reacted within hours. She went to the ER. Her headache was so bad. And they gave her something, sent her home. She went back again. They sent her home again. She didn't recognize her sister. So they brought her to the hospital. They cut a hole in her head to relieve the pressure, which didn't work because she had clots all through her brain, which was creating pressure. She had an ischemic stroke. She had a seizure, paralyzed half of her body, and within a couple of days, she was brain dead. They kept her on life support for a couple of weeks. So the time between the vax and her actual death was about 2.5 weeks, but the onset of symptoms was only hours. Mm-hmm. And in the report about her, written by six doctors from Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, Harvard Medical College, okay, six doctors wrote a report entitled Fatal Post-COVID mRNA Vaccine Associated Cerebral Ischemia. That means the vaccine killed her by stroke. That's what that title means. And every paragraph, they say the vaccine did it. And they say where thrombocytopenia is frequent. They say there are several reports of several COVID vaccines causing this, not just the J&J. They say there are a number of case reports, a number of. And then in the conclusion, the summary, in order to get their paper approved, right, it's extremely rare. Well, if it's extremely rare, why did you say frequent, several, and a number of? Clearly, they're not being truthful. 2 weeks before Brianna got her shot, Diane, 62, acute intracranial hemorrhage in the setting of thrombocytopenia. Her head blew apart. She got the vax. She died. 5 weeks after Brianna died, Eden was 17 years old. She got the shot. She had a headache so bad, she went to the doctor. She went to the doctor again. Same thing as Brianna, right? Well, her headache resolved, though. So she got her second shot. She died from another hemorrhagic stroke. That's three women in 3 months in 21, March, April, and early June, who died by stroke with onset of symptoms almost immediately after vaccine with terrible headaches. Three in 3 months. Amaya was 12 years old. She died in the same month as her vaccine the next year. They're not doing anything. These people, I have them dead to rights with the information. When you look at, you mentioned charts and graphs. I don't like charts and graphs. They're not people. You can dismiss a chart and say, it's a gray bar.
Yeah.
No, these are people. These are people's children. These are people's mothers and fathers. Sorry to be heavy. I mean,
no, this is good. But the people you're mentioning, right? You're mentioning their first names and you have their data. So you've seen the hospital records. You're going through their, the codes that they were, reported by the hospital and things like that. So you've got a lot of data. Have you talked to any of their families after you report on these things? Have you made contact with any people?
I tried. And since I lost my son, I know what it's like. I sat on the couch for 2 years. I didn't want to talk to anybody. Mm-hmm. I had to decide on whether or not I wanted to sue Yamaha. My son drove a motorcycle into a tree at 80. Mm-hmm. He had 27 days. Since they don't answer attempts to contact them, I tried twice.
Yeah.
And after that, you know what? I'm going to come out with the information anyway, because I'm trying to save other kids. We had a 12-year-old boy just die a couple months ago. You know, I know what happened. And then another boy was 11. The family member told me, you know, he got his booster shot last year and he had chest pain, trouble breathing, brought him to Boston Children's Hospital. They put him on a ventilator so they could get their $30,000 from the CARES Act. Because if you incentivize something, if you subsidize something, you get more of it. I mean, you could ask Thomas Sowell, ask Walter E. Williams. They all say the same thing. You subsidize something, you get more of it. Milton Friedman, right? It's a known thing in economics. Well, they subsidize people being put on ventilators to get more people put on ventilators, whether they needed it or not. So he died at 11 years old. They donated his heart. When they pulled it out of his chest, they couldn't use it because it was full of clots from the booster shot.
Yeah. And by the way, the ventilator thing, I mean, there were doctors 3 months into this whole thing, a lot of doctors came out and said, you know, we're killing people with the ventilator. So it's not something that just, you know, crazy people on their computers have, figured this out. Doctors from almost the very beginning said, these things will kill more people than they save. And that is what happened. So beyond the vaccine as well, a couple of other of these famous charts that you've published, I think fairly recently, was things like renal failure and kidney failure. And I think my assumption is that's not coming as much from vaccine as it is coming from other treatments, like some of these medicines that the hospitals have given people for COVID. Am I right about that? You know, because the idea of renal failure and kidney failure, that sounds like the remdesivir situation. Is that right?
Yes. So the common wisdom is that remdesivir is doing it. Now, mm-hmm. You know, I can show you the data, and it's up 100%, and it's up. If I showed you the timeline, so I have all these different graphs. So, well, how come you have this graph, I have a line graph and a bar graph and a daily and a 51-day curve smoothing? I have all these different views of the same data, which you have to have because there are hidden signals among it. Now, the EUA, the important EUA for remdesivir, the big one, was October 22nd, 2020. October 22nd, 2020. The big date is November 2nd, 2020, because that's when the CMS.gov 20% adder kicked in. You get somebody in the ICU, it's $500,000, right? Mm-hmm. Well, they get another 20% if they use remdesivir. So and people talk about, well, it's so many hundreds per dose. I don't care about the dose. Another $100,000 on a hospital bill because you use a drug. If you subsidize something, you get more of it. So they use more remdesivir. Now, is it remdesivir? There's going to be a lot of research needed on that one because baricitinib was also used. And my favorite, vancomycin. Now, I've been told by a renal doctor, don't say vancomycin because it's pretty solid. There's no problem there with renal failure. Mm-hmm. I typed it in. I'm like, all these research papers came up saying vancomycin is destroying the kidneys. So the signal I found.
But vancomycin, if I'm correct, is a very, very, very strong antibiotic. Is that right?
Correct. And that's why it's very important to understand when you read the medical files, the sequence and timing of things that happen. Like a guy gets remdesivir, five doses. Right? I think it's like they go 200 and then 100, 100, 100 after that. And he switches hospitals. They check his blood and urine, and there's not a problem with his kidneys a few days later, right? But then they give him vancomycin, and his kidneys start failing within a day or two, and then he's dead from renal failure. So was it the remdesivir? Was it the vancomycin? Was it the combination of both? Was baricitinib used? Was he vaccinated? These are all things. It's not that people are finding doing the research. The problem is that the government is purposely not looking at things. The willful ignorance, the deliberate indifference to life and death mm-hmm. is what's happening. That's what's noticeable to me is the deliberate indifference, the fact that they're not looking for things. To give you an idea, so people said renal failure is up 20%. And that was all over, you know, and I get a little frustrated. I'm like, you know, chronic kidney disease, which is part of the renal failure bundle, was actually down because you had such an excess mortality in older people who a lot of them have CKD, chronic kidney disease. Mm-hmm. So if that's a deficit, then the acute sudden didn't have it before, now you have it and you die, kind of renal failure, acute renal failure or acute kidney injury or acute kidney failure. They write it different ways on different death certificates, but they're all N17 codes. When you look at just those, it's up 100%. That's 100. There are 100,000 excess, more than normal, 100,000 deaths in the last 2 years, 21 and 22, and it went into 23. It's probably 140,000. That's 140,000 Americans. Compare that with everything back to the Spanish flu. And I'm not talking, well, it's pneumonia, fever, this, that, from a flu. No, this is a single cause of death, 100,000 souls. And it goes down into the 25-year-old range too. This isn't like COVID killing 85, 95-year-old people. Mm-hmm. This took away many family members. And for them to turn a blind eye to something that killed 100,000 people in the last 2 years, not even talk about it, not research it, not look into it. So, I mean, I'm not a doctor. I can't tell you remdesivir did it. There's a lawsuit that just came out a couple of days ago. I know the attorneys. You know, everybody seems to think it's remdesivir. That's cool. You know, is it baricitinib? Probably not. You know, is it vancomycin? It might be vancomycin with remdesivir. Somebody's got to look into it, though. I mean, I found this acute is different from chronic. When you separate them, you find there's 100,000 souls lost.
Mm-hmm. Well, John, we're going on now about 45 minutes. So that's usually my limit on the podcast. My dog, Martha, is barking. And I think I heard your dog barking. So maybe do we have to give our dogs a walk? Is that what we have to do now?
Well, I'll be letting him out the back. He can walk himself. I walk him in the middle of the day.
Okay.
My job is done.
Well, and my job with this podcast was really to, either reintroduce you or introduce you to who's ever listening to my podcast. And so this is only the beginning. Obviously, they can get a flavor of, once you start going, it's hard to turn you off. So hopefully people will follow you. And like I said, I mean, I have gone down the rabbit hole with some of your videos and they are quite amazing. But after a while, you're like, this is really amazing. Like the for a guy who doesn't need convincing, I certainly look at this stuff a lot, it's funny. So there's a lot to see with you. Hope people follow you. This was a great conversation. And do you mind if I give your name to Eric Metaxas?
Oh, please do, man. I love that guy. I almost got misty eye just when you mentioned his name. He's a true Christian. And, he's just a good guy. You can tell. You can tell he cares about people. So, yeah, definitely. I'd love to talk to him.
Excellent. All right. I'll do that. No promises. Hopefully he likes you, but he might be like, I'm not talking to that guy with the sunset behind his head. So this was a great conversation. Thanks for doing it. And let's do it. Maybe we'll have an annual chat because I'm sure you're going to keep suing people.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I don't want to, but I'm really trying to get into criminal court. Wait till you see the CDC memorandum in the next 2 weeks. It's about 250 pages long. The factual allegations will be 100 pages and then 200 pages of graphs. But the factual allegations are very damning against the CDC. It'll go to the directors of the CDC, FDA, NIH, three state attorneys general, and I'm trying to get it before a statewide grand jury.
Great. And I think next time we might try something like a Twitter Spaces, because I think that's where this would be really cool, because we could get you on there and then bring in some listeners to ask you questions and things like that. I think that'd be kind of cool.
Sure. I've done many. I try to avoid them now, but when I go on, people come.
Yeah.
A lot of people come.
Excellent. All right. John Bodwin, Senior. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Tom.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.